Blog Talk Radio.
Let's do it. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh. 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 Oh yeah. Surviving Saturday. 365 days of that good stuff. Motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Roan, and the crew coming to you live. We got a great show for you today. We got Dr. Bruce in the house, Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa, Black August, and much more. Come on with me, y'all. Oh, yeah. There's no better love. Oh, yeah. Brothers and sisters, there is no greater love than for self and kind. No greater love, I tell you. There's no greater love. And here at the NAAEA, we have to do the work of working on ourselves, of doing the work of learning to love ourselves again. That love begins with you and me, how we see ourselves, how we treat ourselves, how we love ourselves as we move through this system that has taught us to really hate ourselves, to be honest. And we're going to have to do the work of loving ourselves just as we are. We're going to have to do that work of looking at ourselves in the mirror and loving just exactly what we see. Now, we can change who we see by what we do, but the first work is to begin to change your mind about who you are, right? We've been conditioned. We have to disrupt the cycle of conditioning that says we're ugly, right? We got big lips, big nose, and you light and you dark and all that stuff that divides us. And come back to that natural love, that natural, beautiful love for self that says, I am somebody and special and loving and lovely just the way I am. And we don't need anybody to validate that for us because we are creations of the Most High Creator who made us in his likeness and his image. And you can't go wrong with that. You cannot go wrong with that. So let's go over to the tenets of the NAAEA. That is simply we have to have a political agenda. Yes, we do. Wherever you live in this country, you're going to have a political agenda. That's really examining the politics in your area that we can create a political agenda that helps us to create institutions that define our own reality. And that means changing some things as well, changing the laws that affect and impact us, changing it to where that we can use the system to benefit us instead of the system not benefiting us, if that makes sense. Next is the economic agenda. We have to understand capitalism and the money management system. And in order to create these institutions that define our own reality, we are going to have to understand how to use money, how to use money as a tool for our empowerment and our improvement. And we're going to have to do that. We're going to have to do the work. Next is the A. I'm spelling peace, y'all. The A is health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. It comes under athletics. You're going to have to take care of your mental health, physical health, emotional health, and spiritual health. Your wellness is important. Your health is your wealth. You're going to have to take care of your body. Push away from the table. Go for walks. Get a fitness plan. Get a mental health and wellness plan that you can focus on reducing stress, worry, and anxiety while all the while getting stronger and healthy mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, socially, and culturally. And next is to see relevant cultural programs that really help guide us, make us feel good about ourselves, help us to help our children to become confident again, chin up, chest up, ready to go, ready to compete with those around us, and that we can produce the best of our people and continue to build that cycle as we grow our children. And lastly is the E, education. It's a comprehensive education that really looks at how well-rounded that we can be in all areas because we have to show the world again that we're ready to do that. And now, Stan Mack in a moment. Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
That's right, Brother Stan. We got to create those institutions for ourselves. No one else is going to do that for us. And we got to stop trying to get in and fit in. Stop trying to be like other people and be your original, beautiful self. Because that's what it's all about. And Brother Stan is right. He's not with us physically, but he's with us in spirit. Now we're going over to the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. No, I got to bring him in, right? Brother George, are you ready? Here we go. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the show.
You didn't bring me in, so I was waiting on, you know, the introduction. There you go.
It's a little low today. Yeah, there we go. Come on, Brother George. Oh, hey, Mom. How you doing? You know I got to say hi to Mom. All right, Brother George, what you got for us today?
Yes, sir. Well, today, the Kwanzaa principle is Ujamaa, and it's cooperative economics. To build and manage our own stores, shops, and other businesses, and to profit from them together. Now, the symbol depicts two crocodiles sharing a common stomach. They illustrate the fact that we are all interdependent, and our success, in fact, our life, depends upon all of us working together for our mutual benefit. So that was very interesting. You know, you can never stop respecting Brother Marlana Karanga for putting that system together for us. And with the Willie Lynch segment, I'm going to read from a book. I still think this book is very interesting, From Niggas to Gods, by a brother by the name of Akil. And I'm reading from the section called True Black Man. A true black man, a real black man, a true black man is an alive black man. A true black man is an awakened black man. A true black man is a quickening black man. A true black man is an upright black man. So who are we? Who are we? To put it straight and honest, we are the dead, rotten, remaining, leftover carcass of the true black man. I am man enough to admit the truth of the actual fact. We are the remains of what was once was a true black man. We are the dry bones in the valley and the carcass where the eagles have gathered together to feast upon our remaining black flesh. This is us. Almost everyone on this planet has feasted from the flesh of the black man to fill their lusty, greedy, hungry desire for power while casting us aside to die. These pale children thirsted for the black power of their black father. They were not patient enough to learn from the righteous black father, so they wickedly sought to take the book away from he who sat at the center upon the throne. So we allowed them to take the book, even though they were not worthy. We allowed the wicked, impatient, immature children to viciously take the book. In our wisdom, we allowed the child to exercise its wicked will. This was allowed to teach this child a valuable lesson. The child now has the book, but the child has no understanding of the book, possession of the book, which directly verifies his childish ignorance to the book. Now, I know that y'all know what book he's talking about. He's talking about
the Quran and the Bible, the books that a lot of the understanding of God is written in. And so he was talking about that. And I think that that picture, right, a relevant one, that's going to lead into the topic that we are going to be discussing today, one of the topics. So if you don't have any questions, brother, it's back to you.
All right. Thank you, Brother Joe. It's a great job. But before we transition, let's talk about that book for a minute. How do we get our people back to the book? Those people had the book, control some of the book, but how do we get our people to understand that that and those are our books?
Well, part of it is that many of us do have a book because it's the most popular book on it. We really read it from our perspective. You know, I'm not, I'm simply saying that we need to read the book based on our experience. And I think that we would get a great deal more out of the book than what we do right now. So that's the best answer I can give you.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. We appreciate you.
Yes,
and as always, great, beautiful, and spectacular job. Keep it coming. Keep it coming.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Thank you. Now, we have to get to a place, right, before we get into the show today. We're going to have to begin to show the world once again that we know who we are. We have to let the world know now that we're ready. We're ready to perform. We're ready to take that next step. We're ready to do some things that we haven't done in a long time. We have to become builders again. Parents, fathers, mothers, grandparents, great aunts, great uncles, great families, great communities. And we learn together how to support one another again. That's the work that we must do, but we have to be ready to do that work. And that is a daily work. That is a work that we can't take for granted anymore. We're going to have to make some critical decisions about how we're going to perform, how we're going to treat each other, how we respect each other, and the things that we need to do collectively to get that work done. It's time for change, and that change begins with you. You're going to have to take it upon yourself to be the example, truth of that work that needs to be done within yourself. Finding that space within you where the great creation begins and working your way out. I know that we can do it. Again, we have to begin to perform now for the world to see the children of the African slaves perform at our greatest height again. We've already built a country. Now can we resurrect ourselves? And can we do that in the most beautiful, eloquent way ever? Can we now turn inward, not in a self-destructive way, but inward to see our inner beauty and reclaim our beauty just as we are? Our ancestors left it for us in all types of work, whether that's 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, or 5,000 years ago. It's on the walls of the pyramids. It's in your religious precepts. It's in everything that you know. You just have to see yourself in it. And as we continue to grow and continue to learn who we are, let's continue to do the work of working on ourselves. And that is a fact. And that is where it's at. It's Empowerment Sunday. Oh, Saturday. I'm a day ahead. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. We got Dr. Bruce coming up in just a minute. And again, call a friend. Tell them about the Empowerment Hour. It's an hour and a half now. 845-277-9250 is the number to call. Call in. Let's get this conversation started. And I am trying to see Dr. Bruce. Dr. Bruce, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Dr. Bruce.
Yes,
the
sir.
The doctor is in the house, ready to do surgery. You ready to perform surgery on our minds?
I most certainly am. I got all my tools, my scaffold, my sudra, everything I need. Got some nurses around me, too, ready to help those patients who might need a little help. But I'm ready to operate, my brother.
All right. We got some mental surgery going on as we reclaim our African minds by doing the work of doing the mental surgery, going in and cutting out the old stuff and recapturing our mind by doing the work clinically. It's a clinical examination of your mind as we continue to do the work. We're going to talk first before we get started with the show about Black August. I'm going to bring Brother George in for a minute to kind of give us a synopsis of what Black August is, and then we're going to educate our listeners on what that is and then transition over to Brother Dr. Bruce for the show. But Black August is powerful. It's powerful. Brother George.
Brother George.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Black August.
Well, we had talked briefly, you know, with Dr. Bridges earlier in the week, and he spoke about the fact that Black August actually originated in the prison system. And right then I said, well, that makes perfect sense, because a lot of the young brothers, when they go in, and, you know, it's always a sad situation when you receive a great deal amount of time, you know, on both ends of the crime, somebody's pain. And when they get those long stints, like after they're there for a while and they wake up to the realization, you know, that they're going to be there, they, you know, many young brothers tend to begin to research first probably on their own case to see if they can try to get themselves out. And then secondly, once they become hungry for information, they start latching on to some of the other brothers that are there, and they learn a great deal about our history and culture and many of the leaders who have had great accomplishments in the past. And they begin to learn about Elijah Muhammad and Marcus Garvey and nowadays Dr. King, you know, because many of the people of the 60s that we know about, they had no idea about, you know, the brothers like Malana Karanga that put together, you know, Kwanzaa. And so it didn't surprise me when Dr. Bridges said that Black August had, you know, its foundation had started in the prison system.
All right, thank you, Brother George. And Dr. Bruce,
yes, sir,
as wise and as magical as you are, let's close it out with some beautiful words on Black August. Thank you, brother.
All right. Thank you, Brother Marvin. And as Brother George said, and as you said when we talked a little earlier too, a lot of our people don't have any knowledge of Black August. Now, most of us do know about February, of course, being Black History Month, and Black August, just to let you know, it is different from Black History Month in February. And Black August started in about 1979 in San Quentin Prison out in California as a response to the death of Jonathan Jackson and George Jackson, the Soul Dad brothers. And it started as a response to that situation and also as a response to the conditions of Black men and Black women in the prison institutions of the United States of America. It highlights the fight against repression, oppression, and a new kind of thinking among Black inmates. And it was during this time when Black August was established, there were quite a few things going on during the month of August. As we look at the calendar, which we'll mention a few in a minute or two, and I hope our people, I guess you told them to get their pens and papers and stuff to ready so they can take some notes on what we're talking about today, because we won't get a chance to go into it completely, but you can jot it down and do a little research on it yourselves on your computer or wherever you'd like to. But when Black August started, as Brother Joy said, people were researching and began to find out that the whole idea of the prison system was terrible when it comes to Africa, and still is when it comes to African American men and women. And what you had occurring here in the month of August, the founders noticed after doing research that there were quite a few important things happening during the month of August in the history of black people. One that occurred during the month of August was the rebellion of Brother Nat Turner in Southampton, Virginia. Just one date, and people can look on that a little. As a matter of fact, we'll probably discuss it on this program next week, because Nat Turner's rebellion took place August 21st, which is, like I said, Black August, which would be next Sunday. And so that's an important date. Another important date in August is the beginning of the Haitian Revolution with Toussaint Louverture and the soldiers in Haiti, which is very important. And during the month of August is the birth date of Fred Hampton, the chairman of the Black Panther Party, who was the chairman of the Black Panther Party in Chicago, Illinois. Also, Marcus Garvey held a big convention in New York City during the month of August before he was put on trial and eventually deported from America, you see. And also, the Watts riots occurred in August, you see. The riots in Watts, in which several thousands of people were killed, and the whole Watch Stack program was held that we saw on Netflix or on television with all the acts that Reverend Jesse Jackson was responsible for bringing together. So all these kinds of things happened during the month of August and many more. So I would suggest to our listeners to go to their computers and just pull up information on Black August. And another thing that happened, too, in August, which I wanted to mention, which relates directly to what we're talking about, and that is civil rights activist Lamar Smith in Mississippi was killed on the morning of August 13th. And today's date is August 13th. And I want to talk just for a few minutes about Lamar Smith, who was killed on August 13th, 1955, as a matter of fact. White men shot and killed Lamar, and he's a name you don't hear much about, killed Lamar Smith, who at that time was a 63-year-old black farmer and veteran of World War I. Listen now, farmer and also a veteran of this country, World War I veteran. He was shot in front of the Lincoln County Courthouse in Brookhaven, Mississippi, while he was encouraging African Americans to vote in local runoff elections. And he was a voting rights advocate who worked with the Regional Council of Negro Leadership, and they had threatened him and warned him to stop trying to register black people to vote in the community. His murder took place on the courthouse lawn in front of dozens of witnesses, including the sheriff at that time, a man by the name of Robert Case, actually saw the murder committed, but he even permitted one of the assailants to leave the crime scene covered in blood. And days later, that man and two others were arrested in connection with the shooting, and all three suspects were white. But now, just to briefly cut it short, and then you all can read on your own, in September, like I said, August, this was August, a grand jury composed of 20 white men declined to indict the three suspects for murder after witnesses failed to come forward to testify. And following the grand jury's report, district attorney criticized the lack of witness cooperation and complained about the sheriff's handling of the case, but despite him saying that, they still did not proceed with any kind of investigation. And so the criminal case against the three suspects was dismissed, and no one was held accountable for Lamar Smith's murder. So on this date, August 13th of Black August, is the date that Lamar Smith was killed in front of the courthouse in Brookhaven, Mississippi. And you don't hear too much about him, but I just wanted to bring that out in terms of Black August. So another important point about Black August, and that is our listeners may want to go ahead and do some research and look at the many political prisoners who are still political prisoners right now during the month of August. Imam Jamil El-Amin, formerly H-Rap Brown, is still incarcerated. Sundiata Okoli is still incarcerated, you see, and several others are still incarcerated during what we call Black August. So that's just a little information on Black August, but those who have access to a computer, laptop, desktop, or on your telephone, you can just key in or speak into Google information about Black August, trying to make it easy. As Brother H.R.R. Brown used to say to me years ago, he said, don't make anything hard for people to do who may be listening to you or who may be following what you're trying to say. Make it easy, which reminds me as I begin to give it back to you, Brother Marvin, again, and that is when Brother George mentioned this being, you mentioned the operation, I'm about to operate, which is true. It reminds me in about 1973 when I went to Chicago, Illinois, to hear Elijah Muhammad in person. His topic was Operation of a Nation. So if anyone were to hear that topic, the first thing you think about and understand the Muslim program, you would think that he was talking about how to run a nation in terms of how to get the trucks there, delivering the products and architect to design the structure of the streets and commerce and, you know, just how to operate a nation, how to run a nation, how, like you operate a car, operate a particular piece of equipment. But to my surprise, when he was talking about his topic was Operation of a Nation, he was talking about operating on the minds of Black people, which is very important today. And that's where in a doctor in a classroom, the doctor doesn't have to be in an OR room, operation room, but the doctor in the classroom teaches, or the doctor in church on Sunday, the preacher becomes a doctor. He needs to operate on the minds of our people, and that's what we're trying to do here on the African American Empowerment Program, operate on the minds of Black people, which really need surgery.
Yes, indeed, Dr. Bruce, and amen to that. He's doing surgery on the pulpit and in the room, in the surgery room. All right, we're going over to the Recapturing of the African Mind series with Dr. Bruce. But before we get there, let's have a moment of silence for Brother Lamar Smith, right? Gave his life.
Very good, Brother Marvin, very good.
Let's have a moment of silence because he gave his life. And so many other brothers and sisters have committed their lives, right? Your life is your most precious gift, and somebody's willing to give it up so you could vote or your ancestors could move forward. So let's quiet ourselves for just a moment for Brother Lamar. May we move forward with him and many, many others who sacrifice themselves, with them on our minds and in our hearts. All right, now it's time for Recapturing the African Mind. We've got to do the work of working on
ourselves. Brother Marvin,
we have to reclaim. Yes, sir.
Before we go into that, let me just mention, too, a good brother friend of mine sent me something, or a text to me, to show you how this repression that we're talking about in the institutions and the prisons of America, which we're going to also continue a little bit of that on next week, is still going on. Some of us may not have known because it didn't make the major media, but a good friend of mine in Fayetteville, North Carolina, Brother Dang, sent me an article from the program called Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, and she was talking to Omali Yeshitela, who is the leader of the African People's Socialist Party in America, an organization that's been going on for about 50 or 60 years and has branches throughout the country. Their headquarters of organization was intruded upon, invaded upon, and they shot drones and shot weapons into the building and took people's cell phones and all kinds of things that we don't even hear about. So it's still going on today. And they claim that Brother O'Malley was associated with some Russian people involved in espionage, but that the headquarters is in St. Louis, Missouri, but down in St. Petersburg, Florida, and St. Louis, Missouri, where the brothers and sisters have been building up their communities in terms of fixing housing and redevelopment and those kinds of things, but the American government attacked that particular organization's headquarters in St. Petersburg, Florida, also in St. Louis, Missouri. But to those who are tuned in, if you want to look that up, you can just print into Google or speak into Google about the attack on the African People's Socialist Party of America, and it happened at the end of July this particular year. So what happened in 1955 and what happened with the invasion of the home of Fred Hampton in Chicago, Illinois, and what has happened to many African Americans, what happened with the Black Panther Party, with the shootouts, it has not changed. So I just want to make that point very clear, Brother Marvin.
Thank you, Brother Bruce.
Yes, sir. And this that we're doing too, Brother Marvin, what we have to realize too is that our fighting and responding against oppression in this country did not just happen in this country, which relates back to my book that we've been discussing for the last few weeks, Recapturing the African Mind. Right, right. We have found that we are on Chapter 6 in my book, and Chapter 6, believe it or not, is called Responses of African Leadership to Missionary-Controlled Education and Religious Policies. Now, I'm going to repeat that because it relates directly to Black August and to what Black August and the policies of Black August to be against repression, be against oppression, be against miseducation, and to be about the upliftment of African people around the world. So on the continent of Africa, there were responses of African leadership to this missionary control education and religious policies, which is Chapter 6 of our book. And I start off this particular chapter with the words of Bob Marley, and he says, "We refuse to be what you wanted us to be. We are what we are, and that's the way it's going to be." That's from one of his songs, Bob Marley. "We refuse to be what you wanted us to be. We are what we are, and that's the way it's going to be," you see. And this is what African leadership was beginning to see on the continent of Africa, and this is what African people in America were beginning to see in 1979 with the beginning of and the establishment of Black August. Now, to Chapter 6, many Africans attending mission schools, as we talked about a few weeks ago, most of the schools in Africa and actually in America were established by missionaries. Many Africans attending the mission schools began to see several contradictions between the colonial policies or the policies of white people and the realities and the policies of the church. And national consciousness began to rise in the 1920s in Africa. And many of these nationalists questioned the missionaries' reasons for being in Africa. And as an example, many of the leaders in Africa, when Africa became independent in the late 1960s, were products of missionary schools. Robert Mugabe, for example, the now deceased president of Zimbabwe, was himself a product of missionary education. So it's not surprising then that most of the critics of European rule were themselves products of mission schools. They went to mission schools, received the missionary education, but when they graduated and went further and began to study, they looked back at what they had been taught and saw the contradictions. Now, how can we relate this, members of the African American Empowerment Program here this Saturday afternoon on the program? We in this country, after we have gone to the schools of white America and received education, we look back and we see contradictions. We look back at our education and what we were taught, and we can see that there were many contradictions, many lies, many omissions, and various other kinds of things that happened to us in our education. So education, regardless of what kind it is, it should equip you to begin to analyze and to reason and to see contradictions. Now, one contradiction being the fact that here we are talking about the history of America and the people who actually built America, their contributions are not even mentioned. That's a contradiction. Here you are when you go into a music class and you hear about the European musicians, the classical musicians, Tchaikovsky and Chopin and Brahms and these other European musicians. You begin to listen to that, but when you go back and study, you will find that music itself started with people on the African continent. So how are you going to discuss music and not talk about Africa? That's a contradiction. How are you going to discuss mathematics and not talk about the fact that African people who were mathematicians built the pyramids, built the great walls of Zimbabwe, built the whole earth, the castles in Scotland and Ireland were built by black people. So when you begin to talk about architects and mathematics, and when you begin to go into a math class, a class on algebra, and you talk about algebra, but yet you don't say anything about Muhammad ibn Musa al-Khwarizmi, who was the person who first talked about algebra, and his book was actually a shortened form of his book was where algebra itself came from. He wrote a book called Algebra wa Muqabalah. Europeans took off the wa Muqabalah and gave us the algebra and talked about algebra. So my point is, and it reminds me of when I used to study under Brother Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, he would always say, when you educate people, you must heighten the contradictions. So we have to heighten the contradictions, make the contradictions become clearer, make the contradictions become brighter in our minds, and then we will see that there's something else other than what we've been taught. So these African leaders who had studied in mission schools began to see the contradictions. And we noticed that Nnamdi Azikiwe, and there are many people probably who are tuned in today, and I'm going to take my time and spell some of these words, who all this material may be new to you, but just hang in there with us and you're going to pick something up. But Nnamdi Azikiwe, who was the first president of independent Nigeria, last name spelled A-Z-I-K-I-W-E, A-Z-I-K-I-W-E, first name Nnamdi, N-N-A-M-D-I, two N's, N-N-A-M-D-I. Again, N-N-A-M-D-I. Azikiwe, the first president of Nigeria, he made this statement about missionary education and mission-educated Africans, and it reminds me, I'm going to tie this right back into what Brother George was talking about earlier about religion. Nnamdi Azikiwe made the following statement, which was quoted from Kwame Nkrumah's book, which we'll talk about Nkrumah in just a minute. But Nnamdi Azikiwe said, personally, I believe the European has a God in whom he believes and whom he is representing in his churches all over Africa. I'm quoting Azikiwe and continuing. He believes in the God whose law is ye young, ye must weaken. I mean, ye strong, ye must weaken the weak. He says, ye civilized Europeans, you must civilize the barbarous Africans with machine guns. Ye Christian Europeans, you must Christianize the pagan African with bombs, poison gas, and et cetera. This is what Nnamdi Azikiwe said about African people who were worshiping European gods. So Africans quickly began to recognize that the purpose of mission education was to render them forever subservient and dependent upon the colonizers. Now, I want to slow that down and say it again. And when I slow it down and repeat it, I want you all who are listening to think about the education that we have had in this country. I repeat, Africans quickly began to recognize that the purpose of mission education was to render them forever subservient and dependent upon the colonizers. And this is what our education has been in America, an education to render us subservient and dependent upon the colonizers. We're talking about Africa, but what you have to understand, brothers and sisters, is that the same thing that happened on one side of the globe happened also on this side of the globe. Back to the book. There was never any teaching of pride of self and country by the missionaries. Talking about Africa, but think about education in America at the same time. Considering the negative attitudes towards African culture fostered by the missionaries, as contrasted with their treatment of European culture as superior, it is not surprising that many Africans vigorously opposed mission education. Many Africans opposed mission education because they saw that it was only a chance to show Europeans as superior and to show black people as being inferior. So in this chapter of the book, that was just an introduction, we're going to talk about some of the Eurocentric educational policies imposed during the colonial and post-colonial eras. And I'm going to start with one person today, and then when I come back, which will be, I think, week after next, I'm going to go ahead to discuss that the same chapter, chapter 6, for those who have the book, and talk about the responses of other African leaders to this missionary education. The first one we're going to talk about was the leader of the first African nation to become independent from Europeans, and that was Ghana under Kwame Nkrumah. Now, a little information about Dr. Nkrumah. Now, and before we talk about Dr. Nkrumah, just wanted to mention that, as I said before, Ghana was the first African nation to become independent, and it became independent about 1960. Okay, and Kwame Nkrumah went to a Roman Catholic school as a boy, where he learned English, arithmetic, and geography, sounding similar to our education in America. But the main subject, listen very carefully now, but the main subject that was taught in the primary school run by the missionaries who taught Kwame Nkrumah in the Roman Catholic school, the main subject taught was religion. Nkrumah was an, then there's a reason for that, which we'll talk about a little later. Kwame Nkrumah was an altar boy who took his religious studies very seriously and was baptized and received the Christian name Francis. Now, just to go back for a minute, to spell his name, to those who might want to study and do a little research on Kwame Nkrumah, I'm going to spell his name slowly here, Kwame, K-W-A-M-E, K-W-A-M-E, and last name Nkrumah, spelled capital N-K-R-U-M-A-H, N-K-R-U-M-A-H. Now, as is the custom in missionary-controlled schools of Africans, as is the custom of missionary-controlled schools on the plantations of South Carolina, North Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi, Virginia, or on Native American missionary-controlled reservations, Europeans will always change our names into something that they want to call us. So in my book here on page 168, I'm reading here, Kwame was an altar boy who took his religious studies very seriously and was baptized and received the Christian name Francis. They call him Francis. Kwame's experiences illustrated how bright young African minds are set on a path of destruction. After he graduated from school in his little village in West Africa, he went to Accra and he enrolled in what was called the Prince Wales College. Listen now, the Prince of Wales College. Wales, a part of England and the British Isles, the name of a college in West Africa, Prince of Wales College. And this was the first European institution of higher learning in Ghana. Nkrumah went there. Now, with respect to why there is a college in Ghana called the Prince of Wales, Wales is a part of the United Kingdom along with Scotland and England. At Prince of Wales College, Nkrumah's miseducation, I'm calling it miseducation, continued as he learned, listen carefully now, he's in Ghana, at the Prince of Wales College in Ghana, West Africa, he learned British history and geography and sang British songs, like Rule Britannia was his favorite song, Rule Britannia. Here we are, black people being colonized, oppressed, enslaved by the British. We're singing Rule Britannia. This is an example of our minds being wiped out, and this is why we have to cut away this foolishness from our minds and surgically apply the use of our utensils and cut this foolishness out of our minds so that we can recapture our African minds. Here he is in Ghana now, learning British history and British geography. Think about it. And Nkrumah realized, after talking to Nnamdi Azikiwe of Nigeria, that he had to go to the United States to study. So Dr. Kwame Nkrumah came to the United States to study, and he, on his way to the United States, which is also very political as well as economic, on his way to the United States, he stopped over in London on the plane ship here from Ghana to America. He stopped in London, England, and in London he was saying that he looked up at the Eiffel Tower and he was just in awe of all the British architecture that he had been talked about. You see, European white people always try to fascinate the minds of black people in order for us to look up to them, to honor them, and to respect them. So we become fascinated by the Eiffel Tower. We become fascinated by Pike's Peak. We become fascinated by the Empire State Building. You see, so Nkrumah said he went to London and just kept his head up in the air, looking up at the great architecture of the city of London. You see, and so he had been made to love and was fascinated by what European people have in that country, in the same way that we're fascinated by things in this country. Now, after Nkrumah reached the United States, he went to a black college, brothers and sisters. He went to Lincoln University in Pennsylvania, and he began to study religion, and he began to study Catholicism, and he also worked several jobs to survive, and he devoted many hours to the study of history and culture of Africa. Now, another point that I want to make here that's not in my book, but that I know from speaking and listening to Dr. Yusuf Ben Yakanan and speaking and listening to Dr. John G. Jackson before both of these two great African-American historians returned to the ancestors. Dr. Ben Jackson and also John Henry Clark, let me not forget to mention him, would talk about the fact that Nkrumah went to Lincoln during the week, but on the weekends he would come over to Harlem, New York, and sit down in the Harlem study group that was hosted by Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, and John G. Jackson. And that's where he began to study and learn about his culture and his heritage from the study groups that were being held. So today, to those who are tuned in, with all this technology and the podcast that we have here that we're listening to on our phones and some listening on the computer, we have access to a whole lot of information. We don't have to go to the Harlem to the Harlem Study Club and sit down at the study group to sit down and study. You just dial a number on your phone or just pull it up on your computer and listening to someone who may be thousands of miles away. For example, Brother Marvin has sent out some emails to a good brother and some others out in Seattle, Washington, Iron Hebrew out in Seattle, Washington, and sent some information to people down in Dallas, Texas, and everywhere, you see. So today, brothers and sisters, there is absolutely no excuse to not know what's going on in the world today. But Nkrumah learned from Jackson, Clark, and Dr. Ben. Now, Nkrumah had to know how the traditional culture of American Europe could be correlated by African minds who came in direct contact with so-called Western education. The conclusion by Nkrumah was that there must be a synthesis and that a new culture must spring from this synthesis. He was highly critical of Africans who chose to remain apart from their own traditions. The problem was how to educate Africans into modern life without destroying their culture and traditions. Now, Nkrumah, as we began to close our discussion for today and to go to some comments or questions, Nkrumah became interested in two of the most important black leaders of the time, W.E.B. Du Bois and Marcus Garvey. I want to repeat that. Nkrumah became interested in two of the most important black leaders of the time, W.E.B. Du Bois and Marcus Garvey. And both of these are related to Black August because Du Bois, I believe, he died in the month of August, and Marcus Garvey held his convention in the month of August. So all this relates back to our discussion of Black August with the prison system, and also relates to what we're talking about in terms of religion that Brother George mentioned earlier. Nkrumah, back to the book now, back to the book, page 169 at the bottom. He studied the conditions of African Americans and became interested in the Pan-African movement, Pan-African nationalism, and anti-colonialism were rising to the forefront in Africa as well as America. Nkrumah was influenced by Marcus Garvey. And I'm going to quote Nkrumah here as I begin to wind down and turn it back over to Brother Marvin. Kwame Nkrumah was greatly influenced by Marcus Garvey. And Nkrumah, I quote him, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, he once said, quote, "Of all the literature that I studied, the book that had more than any other, that did more, pardon me, of all," I'm going to start over because I want y'all to get this. I'm quoting Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, the first president of independent Ghana, West Africa. He says, and I quote, "Of all the literature that I studied, the book that did more than any other to fire my enthusiasm was the philosophy and opinions of Marcus Garvey." And this is from Kwame Nkrumah's book, The Autobiography of Kwame Nkrumah. And I repeat, he said that of all the books he read, the philosophy and opinions of Marcus Garvey inspired him most. A critical source for reading and development for Nkrumah was the Harlem History Club, where he became familiar with John Clark, John Jackson, and others. And also Paul Robeson contributed greatly to Nkrumah's understanding of racial problems in the United States. It was also through Robeson that Nkrumah became acquainted with several artists, entertainers, and composers, you see. So on next week, we'll go a little further. But of all the books who inspired Kwame Nkrumah was the philosophy and opinions of Marcus Garvey that he learned about in the Harlem History Club on Saturdays with Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. Yusef Ben Jacanan, and Dr. John G. Jackson. Thank you very much, Brother Marvin. Give it back over to you. And I hope you all got something from the lecture. If you have any questions and comments, feel free when Brother Marvin calls your last four numbers to question or make comments.
Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Again, very informative. It's about education as we go through the peace concept. The final E is a comprehensive education. Knowledge is power, my people. You got to know your history. All right, so before we go to the lines, Dr. Bruce, I got a quick question for you. how do we re-educate our people, African Americans, right, who have been completely stripped of our history and our culture? What do you think?
Well, I had my mute on. I'm back. Well, how you asked me, how do we go about doing it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, first of all, wherever that a good question. Wherever you or I may be, to those who are in the listening audience, whatever situation we're in, whatever our jobs are, whatever field of endeavor we are involved in, we should take every minute to use that time to educate our people. As an example, if you are in a class on theater or you're talking to people about theater, talk to them about Ira Aldridge and Paul Robeson, and talk to them about the black man Shakespeare. Talk to them about the black man Macbeth, when you talk about Macbeth and Macduff and Endulph and that whole area. Learn about it so that you can pass it on. If you happen to be teaching mathematics, talk about Muhammad ibn Musa al-Khwarizmi. Don't worry about that right now, how to spell it. We won't take time on that. But talk about that. When you talk about calculus, talk about the fact that calculus was used by African people before America. If you're teaching whatever it is, just begin to pull information that relates to your people. If you're on a construction site and you're on break or something, and you have a chance to talk to the brothers who are working, if they will listen. That's another thing, too. I'm to the point to where if they don't listen, leave them alone. But if they want to listen and want to learn, tell them something, just brief little small facts, maybe from 100 Amazing Facts About the Negro, or some brief facts. As a good friend of mine, I mentioned him again, down in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I hope he's tuned in. As he used to come and buy in my bookstore, J.A. Rogers' book, From Superman to Man, a very simple book where you can learn and pick up information. So to answer your question, Brother Ma, and another way, those who are tuned in, share the number that you have to listen to this program, or the access on your computer, the website. Share it with other people. Let them know that every 2 o'clock we're on the air, and they can tune in and listen, you see. So these are just a few of the ways that we can do. Whatever it is that we're doing or involved in, try to bring some aspect of culture. If you're at a party and you're talking about music, and I never forget, and I'm doing this more now because Brother George said people like to hear about these stories sometimes that may not be from the book. But I'll never forget when I was at a party as a student at North Carolina Central University, I had just learned about reggae music. And, of course, during the time I was at the party, people were listening to Al Green and listening to the Temptations and Supremes and Carla Thomas, Rufus Thomas, Sam and Dave. And so I went into the party, and the brother, even sometimes today, he'll bring it up. We laugh about it because he's grown and understands a little better. But I went into the party and said, hey, man, you playing this R&B that's talking only about I love you and you love me and eyes so red and lips so blue, or the other way around, lips so red, eyes, whatever. But anyway, I said, why don't you play some reggae? Because reggae is music that will uplift and will also educate people here at the party. Put on some Bob Marley. And the brother said, well, you know, I don't have any Bob Marley. And, you know, I told him, I just happened to have some Bob Marley in my car, a cassette tape at the time. And what I did was I brought it in, and the brother will never let me forget it. He said, I had a good party going on, and you brought in Get Up, Stand Up by Bob Marley. And people not familiar with that, and people started to leave the party. He said, you turned my party out. And we laugh about it sometimes now. But my point is, wherever you are, whatever the situation, family reunions, weddings, whatever the case may be, if there's any chance that you can sneak in some culture and heritage to our people, do it. Hope that answers your question, Brother Marvin.
Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Absolutely, yes. And again, if you want the book, because you need to get the book, Recapturing the African Mind, written by Dr. Bruce, 919-956-5972. Get the book. You need it, right? It should be a part of your library, your family library, right? You should be teaching this to your children. And also the names that you're hearing on the show, right? Because we need to, again, know our history and our culture. Let's go to the lines, Dr. Bruce. You ready?
Yes, sir.
Brother George, are you ready?
Yes, sir.
All right. Last four. That's how we're calling it. The last four of your number, if you're on the call-in line, 7487. 7487. You're in and you're on. You're live on the Empowerment Network Saturday show. Do you have a question or comment?
Jumbo.
Hey, welcome to the show.
I'm here. This is Nana V. I am here.
Hey, Nana, again, welcome to the show. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I came back. I missed Dr. Bruce last week, but I'm here, brother.
Good to hear you, Sister Nana V, and we're going to be talking again in a few days. But I'm glad you called in and glad you listened, and I hope you're learning something. And we thank you very much for your call.
Yeah, and I just want to let you know I'm here today. I can contribute, you know. But just wanted to let you know I was here. First time I caught you.
All right. Thank you, Sister.
All right. Thank you so much. We appreciate you calling in and your support. Again, pass it along. We're trying to empower our people around the country. All right. Let's go down to 3347. 3347, you're live. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce? 3347. All right. Let's go down to 0148. 148, you're next, you're live, and you're on. Do you have a question or comment? 0148. All right, let's move on to 8502, you're next, you're live, and you're on. 8502, are you there? Question or comment? Everybody listening today, Dr. Bruce? I think you laid it down pretty good.
That's good, but I really wish they speak. I wish they speak to them and say something to them. I just like to hear the voices sometimes.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brother Marvin, move them on. Maybe somebody will say something to them. Let me hear you. Know you're living.
Tell us where you're calling from, at least. I don't have nothing to say, but I'm calling from where I'm from. All right, let's go down to 7415. 7415, you're live. You're on. Question.
How
comment,
you doing, brother?
Statement, thought. Hey, welcome
yes,
to the
sir,
show. How are
doing?
You?
This is Brother Dane down in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Brother Dane, my brother. I'm glad you got through, brother. First time listener, Brother Marvin.
Yes, sir. Program is very good. I'd like for the brothers and sisters, whoever, to expand a little bit on how we can educate some of these young brothers that's killing each other every day. You know, we got a bad situation with the young brothers that have no education, no direction on a certain level. And, you know, they're just constantly killing each other every day. You know, this is the elephant in the room. This is our so-called future. And it's not the majority, but the little bit that has the attention of killing each other every day, you know, is getting in the news media. But this is something in our community we need to address. Y'all have a good day. Peace.
You know,
Thank you, Brother Dank.
I want to thank Brother Dane for that call, Brother Marvin, and that's a good question. I really have been thinking about it myself because to those who are tuned in from around the country, if you don't know, Durham, North Carolina, where I'm speaking to all of you from, is has high levels of black-on-black killing and gang-type warfare. Shootings, as Brother Dane talked about, and I'm sure same thing is down in the area of North Carolina he's from. And I really have been thinking about it, and that's a good question maybe to throw out to some of our listeners. How do we get to these brothers? And when we start talking about, as I mentioned earlier, the schools and the churches, many of them, they don't go to school. They don't go to church. You know, and so That's a good question. I'm really kind of, and I'm just being honest, and some people say, well, he didn't even give me. I'm just being honest. I just, I've really been thinking about how do you get to them to make them understand that we should not be killing each other, that we should not be shooting each other, that we should be trying to do something to. And see, one thing about it, because of the way that we've been taught, we're actually shooting the people who are our enemies. We're fighting against people who should not be our enemies. We shouldn't be each other's enemy. We're fighting against each other when our oppressors who put us in this situation are laughing about it. You see, so I'm really at a loss, and I just admit it, because that's something that really needs to be done. Brother Martin, but not to take up all the time on saying nothing, and I'm talking to myself now. Maybe we move on. Somebody might have an idea about how to do it. Now, you know, the Nation of Islam many years ago had a good way of doing it. But maybe it's because of the area that I live in. I don't know about other areas around the country. With the pandemic, I hadn't been moving around as much, and most people haven't. But the Nation of Islam used to be very attractive to young men and women, but we're talking about men. Young men in the community, and they would go into the Nation, and the whole thinking would change, and it would help them. Malcolm X would be a good example, but I just don't see that happening now as much as it did under the leadership of Elijah Muhammad. But I'm just throwing that out. We still there? What happened?
Yes, sir. All right. Dr. Bruce, are you there?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, my line dropped. I'm sorry. All right, but I'm back.
Okay.
Let me just add to that, right? We're working. We're doing the work. And again, it's African-American empowerment. We have to recondition our people. And our theme is disrupt the program. And so it is our stern belief that our young people are being programmed, right, in this society and in this culture by the music, right, by what they see in social media. And so we're going to have to get in on the ground, right, on the ground floor, wherever our people are, reconditioning our people, and it's going to take some work. It's going to take some of our people who have courage to go in and re-educate our people where they are, not afraid of face, but to re-educate our children, to get into schools, to get into communities, to get into community centers, to re-educate our parents, our fathers, our mothers, those brothers who are incarcerated now, educating them so when they come back out, they can re-educate the brothers on the streets as well. So I'm going to go really quickly back over to 0673. I see you got your hand up. 0673, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, Hotep Africa. This is Brother Kevlar, and it's an honor to hear Bruce's voice again. First of all, if you look at the root cause, we have been socialized for war. We have been socialized to be soldiers. Look at how the women have been socialized. Regardless of whether it was Europeanized socialization or not, they were trained to be family. They had Ken and Barbie dolls, Susie the homemaker sets for their baked cakes, pies, and cookies. They got to change papers, diapers. Boys were socialized to be soldiers. At a very young age, we had G.I. Joe, grenades, rifles, and guns, bow and arrows, right? So we went through a European, if I would say, socialization process. If we go through an African socialization process, then we had to replace those things the Europeans gave us. We had to replace those guns with changing tires, certain things that men should know how to do, cut grass, doing yard work, working for the community, right? I learned computers by exchanging my labor for skills. A sister needed working on her files at the office, right? She didn't have anybody to do it. So I said, I tell you what, I have organized your files if you show me computer skills. And that's how I learned computer skills. But look at the root cause. We have been socialized for that. It's not... We ain't just bad people that we just go out and kill people. We were socialized to be soldiers. So whatever they did to us, we have to undo it. And I'm going to pass it on to the next person. Thank you, brother.
All right, thank you. And that's so important to re-indoctrinate and re-educate our people. And that's part of this process that we are in with Dr. Bruce, is to be able to recapture our African mind. learn more about who we are and learn self-love again, right? Our men, right, our young men that are out there are going to take care.
Brother Marvin? I guess his call dropped again.
02. No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, now I can.
Okay, yeah, I'm here. So 5802, let me see if we can get you in. You're live. You're on. You're up next.
Good evening, Brother 5802. Marvin.
Good evening,
Good evening
brother.
Brother.
How
Marvin,
are you?
Brother Bridges. Hello?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can.
Yes,
I can.
Welcome to the show.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah, I just want to say I'm just listening and learning. You know, you have to listen to these programs as much as you can because of the everyday bombardment that you get of this white sickness and filth. You need to listen to shows like this to re-energize yourself. So I'm going to just keep on listening.
All right. That's so true. You're exactly right. I think, again, knowledge is power. We have to educate our people one person at a time, one day at a time. You are exactly right, brother. All right. Let's go on over to, let's see, 1775. 1775, you're up next. You're live and you're on. Do you have a question or comment? 1775.
Hi. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Hi. Thank you. My name is Shaquana Bicote, and I've been listening for the past few weeks here from Richmond, Virginia. I don't have too much
welcome.
To say, but I do agree. Can you hear me?
Now
yes.
We can.
Go right ahead.
Okay. One of the things that I've been learning from you guys, I've learned so much over the last couple of weeks, and I'm appreciating it so much. But the African value system, someone spoke on that last week, and I think that's so important. Once we get back to who we truly are, it's not only about just disrupting the program, but also breaking away from this system and this program that they designed for us and step into our own schools, our own programs that help empower our people, our own food sources, you know, our own way of being able to take care of ourselves. And I think that will empower our communities in a way that, you know, we probably just won't even realize until it happens. So that's all I have to say.
That's true. Thank you so much, sister. And keep listening. Tell
that's
somebody
nice.
Else. Great
I
job.
Will. Thank you so much. Okay.
Sounds like was a first-time caller, Brother Marvin. I wonder, I don't know. But
yes, sir.
Good. Yeah, be sure, sister, to tell some other people about the program. Spread the word.
I will, absolutely.
All right. Let's go down to 0946. Go ahead, Brother George.
I was calling Dr. Bridges. That's one of our co-workers.
So oh, okay. Just, oh, good.
They said we on our, you know, we on our square.
Oh, good. That's why I like to hear. She's at least she's made a comment. Okay, Brother Marvin.
All right, let's go down to 0946. Are you there? You ready? Are you listening? Oops. Let's go over to 6868 first, and then 0946. 6868. Are you there? You're live. You're on. Do you have a question or comment?
Hello. I'm very interested in this program. I have listened from beginning to the end. My name is Sister Robbie Bridges, and I have all my family on the line today. I do, and I have a loss in my family, and I'm still trying to listen to the show, and it's very interesting for Dr. Bridges. And everything's been good, Dr. Bridges, Bruce. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I don't know what else to say at this time, but
thank you for calling, Robbie.
I always listen. I always listen to the show, and thank you guys for listening.
Right. Thank you very much for listening. That's my sister, brother Marvin.
All right. Thank you, sister, for listening. Again, we offer our condolences, Sister Robbie, to
you,
Dr. Bruce, and the family. You all are in our prayers.
Thank you so much. Like I said, all my family is listening in. So get to the next.
That's good. I didn't know that. That's good.
Yes, I told everybody tune in today. Please tune in. Okay. Now, Jordan.
All right. Blessings to the family.
I love it. And I always listen in anyway. So anyway, it's a very good knowledge, very good information. I learned a whole lot today. I just want to let everybody know. I got a question, though. Do we have a question?
Go ahead. Right ahead.
What religion is Kumani? Kumi? Let me see. What religion is Kumi?
I don't. It's who?
What is that religion?
Who?
Q-U-A-M-I, I think. What religion are they? Or he? Kwame?
I'm not sure.
Oh, she's saying Kwame Nkrumah?
Yeah, what religion were they? Right.
Kwame Nkrumah was not they. Kwame Nkrumah was the first president of Ghana, which is the Ghana, a country in West Africa. He was the first president of Ghana after the people organized and kicked white people out of the country and took their country back. Nkrumah became the first president, and he came to school in the United States after he finished high school and then went back home to his country of Ghana and became the first president of Ghana. His name was Kwame Nkrumah.
Yeah. Kwame Nkrumah. Okay. That's what I wanted to know. Thank you so much. Okay. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, sister.
Thank y'all so much.
And
all right.
Those are the kind of questions that we need, right? Because knowledge
right.
is exactly what we learn about.
And that's why brother Marvin, like to take a little time to spell those words, because I know that they're new to a lot of people and they're not familiar.
Right.
And they can write them down and then ask a question like that, because the question she asks is probably a question that other people have or had and just didn't know how to ask or afraid to ask.
Exactly.
You see, so no question is a crazy question. All questions are important. Sometimes, you know, we're in school, they say we don't want you to ask, you know, questions. I don't want to ask questions stupid questions, silly questions.
Exactly.
Right. No question silly on this program, or no question that's too stupid for us to answer, Brother Marvin.
That's
right.
That's
right. And I'm going to say this, like you said, take out your pen and your pencil. And that's what I did. Took out my pen, my notebook. All right. Okay,
very good.
Guys.
All right.
Enjoy the show.
Thank you, sister.
We're listening. Take care.
All right. We all are family, and we all are learning. So we got to learn together, right? So, again, if you're out there listening, you got a question, don't be shy, right? No question is a bad question, because we're in the classroom.
Exactly.
And this is where you learn.
Exactly.
And this is where you get clarity. And I thank you for having enough courage to be able to work through the question until you got the answer. So I continue to applaud you for stepping out and being able to reach out to Dr. Bruce for the answer to your question. Thank you so much, sister.
Thank
you. I like
y'all.
That.
All right.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Got Dr. another
Bruce,
one?
That's what it's all about. Yeah.
Got another one?
I'm going to 0946. 0946, you're up next. Question or comment?
Yes. I have a comment. I'm excited that I heard Shaquana on the show today, who is a millennial. We got some young blood on the show today. And Shaquana, I want to let you know, anything that you think that would help us get more young people on the show, please reach out to me so that we can work with you. We would love to have that energy and representation. So I'm excited that the word is spreading, and I'm excited that we are getting into other demographics. And so I'm very pleased with what's going on, and just wish the show continued success. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sister. The network is growing, and the word is spreading. Continue to spread the word in your community. And we're going to go now down to 6701. 6701. Join the fun. You got a question or comment? Where are you calling from?
No, I don't have a question, but I'm calling from Durham, North Carolina. So just wanted to give a shout-out to Mr. Bridges.
All right. All right. Can I ask you a question? Now, do you mind?
Yes. No,
Dr.
I don't.
Dr. Bruce just talked about what's going on in Durham right now with the African-American community. What do you think are some solutions that we could talk about on how we can begin to reduce the violence in our communities?
That is a good question, but I, at this time, I don't really don't have a response at this time. I don't have a response.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad you called. Keep listening. Thank you, sister. All right. Brother George,
yes,
call
sir.
You in. Got just a few minutes left. We've gone through all the callers that are on the line. Let's talk about that for just a minute, right? And I asked the sister, and I want to get a response from the community if I could, particularly in those areas that are hard hit with our own crime, right, our own violence. And so what do we do, right? And we know what we're doing in our community on the ground, but what do you call solutions as we continue to work toward change in our communities?
Well, I think that all of them are very difficult questions, because if we knew the solution, we probably would have been using it by now. But I think that one of the things that has to be considered is that it's going to take time. It's like when the nation would come in, and Bruce mentioned, you know, under the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, but even under Minister Farrakhan back in the 80s, the nation would go in at the request of some of the mayors and different things like that to do security duty in the projects, the low-income areas. And the brothers would go in, clean up, you know, those areas. But now, days like, I'm not sure, you know, like until some of the mindsets are changed, I don't even know if the minister would, like, allow them to go in, you know, with, you know, and put brothers' lives in danger. Because back then, it wasn't as much quick killing, you know, sporadic killing. You know, two or three people killed a day. You know, in some cities, it's four or five a day, you know. And, you know, we have to really, you know, I spoke about this before. We have to really try to get to our young people to give them, like, to plant, like, an image in it, some imagination, a dream, you know, for them to accomplish with their lives. And when you do that, it tends to make young people focus on trying to achieve those goals instead of looking for love in the wrong places. And you know, I mean, I don't really at this time know how to answer that question with, like, a definitive answer that this will definitely work right now. But I know that re-education of our people is a key ingredient, you know, because I think that for the most part, our young people have been humiliated in the public school system. And it's because of all of the negative activities that we experience as a group of people. You know, like I was telling one of the young people, you know, if your dad called your mom a B-I-T-C-H in front of you, that's very traumatic. And, like, that could change a child's complete disposition at school from an excellent, you know, A-B student to a student that doesn't even want to participate. And so I think that that happens a lot with our children. So it's a lot. It's a lot to unpack there, you know. So I suggest what you just said. Just keep trying to get remedies from the community and put them all together and see, you know, see what works best.
That is the answer, brother, right? I don't think we need to send anybody in. I think the support has to come in from, and I say support from the community, right, but also from the people who live in our communities. So the violence will have to end from the people who are in the violence, right? So we're going to have to go in and reeducate our people one person at a time and do the work of transforming the lives and the minds of our people. Dr. Bruce, are you there? Final comments? Thank you.
Oh, yes, I'm right here, brother.
Brother.
Oh, thank you very much.
Great show. Final comments.
Thank you very much, Brother Marvin. And as I always say, at the beginning of the show, at the in between, and also at the end of the show, I hope that our listeners who are tuned in did learn something that they could use in their lives today, and that's what I really try to do. But the question that we've been had is a question that we really, really, really need to deal with, this black-on-black violence. It's terrible, and it really comes from people not knowing who they are, because when you know who you are, then you will respect who you are, you will love who you are, and then you will try to do right by other people. And that's my final comments.
Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Thank you for a great show. Thank you for the knowledge and the wisdom and the information to continue to serve our community, to help us help ourselves. Brother George, final comments.
Well, I just want to thank Dr. Bridges for all that he's done for the show. Because I've never said that, you know, directly on the show. But I really want to thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, Brother George. I'm glad to hear that, brother. Thank you very much. That does me good to hear that.
You know, because, I mean, we've set up a library of information because all of the shows can be reviewed. And that's to your credit, you know, to Dr. Rogers' credit and Brother Mark. You know, I really appreciate, you know, what is being done. And I think that this is part of the solution, what we're doing right now. You know, it's part of it. It's not the whole thing, but it's part of it. So that's me, Bruce. I mean, that's me, Marvin.
Thank you, Brother George. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. And now for final comments from your brother. It's the work, that true work that needs to be done from the inside out. It is what we call African Americans or Africans in America or the children of the enslaved Africans who now have to turn inward, not in a negative way, but we're going to have to find ourselves and we're going to have to love ourselves and we're going to have to reclaim ourselves. We're going to have to reclaim our communities. We're going to have to reclaim our culture. We're going to have to reclaim our consciousness to develop a collective consciousness, as Brother George says. But the work is going to begin and end with us. If our children are killing themselves, it's our fault. If we don't do something to change that, it's our fault. We can't wait for the Calvary to come by because it's not coming. You are the Calvary. You are the answer. You are the solution. And you need to do something. You need to tell a friend. You need to do the work. You need to listen. You need to learn, and you need to grow. It's an empowerment show for African Americans to do the work of working on ourselves. And the only people that can help us out of this situation is you and I together. That's the only way that we can move forward is together. Until next week, brothers and sisters, stay plugged into the empowerment one day at a time. Peace and blessings. And as always, oh yeah, oh yeah, we coming. Peace.